Welcome to Hi Bob, the officially unofficial podcast for All Mankind on Apple TV Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking season 4, episode 8, Legacy. Aaron, what'd you think of this episode?
Well, I've been chicken littling for the last couple weeks about the show and how I was really worried it was losing me. And I don't take anything back from what I've said the last couple weeks, but a lot of my predictions or a lot of my worries for this episode did not materialize. I think we have a very clear-cut plan that we can follow. I still have a lot of misgivings for how we got here, but as we've talked about before, sometimes, you know, how you arrive somewhere is much less important than is the destination where you arrive stupid or dumb. And I think this is it's a pretty good setup. It's interesting where they cut the episode, because as I was literally like, how in the fuck is Sam going to, they've set this up to be an impossible task, like, and everyone's watching her. How in the world is this going to happen? And I'm very curious to see that. But I liked this episode a lot more than I didn't. I still think there's a couple of like leaps, and maybe the yada yada stuff that may be important, but not nearly to the extent that I was afraid that was going to happen. So I'm kind of like fully engaged with all parts of the plot at this point. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. Aside from some questions about the security around Margot, I think I'm very much on board with what they're doing in this. And yeah, I was happy to see there's a heist with stakes and procedures we can follow. All that stuff is going to be really fun to watch. If this were a stealth mission in a video game, I'd probably, you know, pick everybody off one by one, right? Like, right. Excuse myself to go to the bathroom and then make my way back to the bridge, yeah. Just picking people off,
choke
tying
out
them
Palmer
up. Yeah,
stuff him in an airlock.
Yep. But I don't think she's gonna have that ability, so I really have no idea how she's gonna swap that out, but it's kind of fun to guess and to wonder. So I really like this episode. I'm the same way. I feel like, you know, some of the ground we had to drive over to get here was pretty rough, but I'm enjoying this episode, so no complaints.
Well, okay. Should we just get right to the episode, or do
we?
I mean, okay.
Because yeah, we're gonna talk about it as we go.
Yeah, there's things I'm not so sure about, but I mean, might as well get to them in the context of the episode.
Yeah, let's go pick off these scenes one by one in our stealth mission.
You're listening to Hi Bob. We'll be right back.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Hi, Bob. Welcome back to More for All Mankind.
Sergei wakes up next to his wife and goes about his very pleasant day, going to work at the high school where he teaches. He goes home that night, has a perfectly pleasant evening, until he hears Margot's prepared speech on the news, her defector speech. He gets the paper the next day and reads about her on the front page. Suddenly, that's all he can think about. And eventually, he decides to head south to see her.
Sergei definitely settled down with a Margot type. Would you say that's fair to say?
Yeah, I could see it.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was interesting that the high school he teaches at is Spiro T. Agnew. That's the vice president of Richard Nixon, who resigned in disgrace, and that was it for him in American politics. But never had any of that stuff in this timeline. So mm-hmm. Richard Nixon is just a very, I think, popular U.S. president, and his administration has even his vice president's gotten high schools named after him.
Yeah, they're really painting a picture here of a guy who is not compelled by his current life. He's not excited about living the life he's living. I mean, the show that he's watching is called Just Shoot Me. It's that old David Spade sitcom.
Yeah, sure.
Like, that says something, right? And you look at him and the way he looks at his students, and he's just not fulfilled.
So I feel like in this little cold open that there was a BMAM type of thing, before Margot, after Margot. And I felt like that a lot of his discontent was when he found out Margot is alive and a defector. It didn't seem like he was that unhappy with... I wasn't getting huge, like, season one Walter White vibes from him before the press conference. Or am I crazy?
Really? I don't know. I was. I mean, just the way, I guess, he's... I don't know. I mean, it, like I said, it seems like a pleasant life, but I don't think that's necessarily
It's certainly not
fulfilling.
Running... Roscosmos, the rocket center, and putting people on the moon, and it's definitely not that, for sure.
And I look at the way he reacts when his students are not taking to his teaching, all but one of them, and he just kind of is like, well, what can I do?
I have a question about that one. Do you think the eager beaver teacher's pet type of student is going to be significant going forward?
I don't think so.
The only reason I ask is that this show has had a very long-running tradition of showing how the current and previous generations impacts the generations going forward. You know, you think about Margot with Van Braun. You think of Aleda with Margot. You think of, like, Kelly with Ed. And now you've got Ed and Alex. They haven't really developed Sergei much as it's his own character, but it would be interesting if, like, going forward, this young woman in his class is going to be, you know, she's right in the middle of kind of Rocket City, Rocket Central, and she's being trained by one of the best Russian rocket men. I wouldn't be surprised if they're setting her up to be a Margot / Aleda for future seasons.
Man,
because it's like the camera kind of like wanted you to notice her too.
Yeah, for sure. They spend a fair bit of time on her. I can't see it. I mean, it depends on, I guess, where Sergei and Margot's story goes from here, but
we'll see. Because, like, the first time we saw Aleda, it was just like, oh yeah, we're watching a Mexican family watch the moon landing, and she was just kind of like, we didn't see her panic attacks, didn't see any of her other, like, so it's like, it would be wild to me for them to abandon their storytelling of, like, the generations impacting future generations so I don't know, something to look out for.
Yeah, maybe.
I didn't, IMDb does not, that's, you know, we're like 2 weeks ahead. This is the furthest we've been ahead to prepare for Christmas, and it's surprisingly useless for finding you know, like if you want to look up the cast and crew for episode 408 of For All Mankind, sure, they've got like the regular run. But like these people like this, like they didn't have Bob from UHF last week. But yeah, yeah, I wondered if I wanted to look her up to see if she's been in other things, because obviously if she's had a lot of speaking roles or she's an up and coming actor, then but we'll see. I'm keeping an eye on her.
All right. How much does his wife know about his former life? Think she's clued in to where
I
he
don't
comes
think
from?
She knows a goddamn thing the way she acted about Margot. You know, that wasn't like, isn't that your old flame from the Johnson Space Center? Is more of like, oh, wasn't she the, I thought she died. And nah, I think she's completely in the dark.
Do you think she knows he's a Russian defector, or?
I don't even think that. Like, because if you knew your husband's a Russian defector, like that conversation goes a lot differently.
Yeah, right. No, I'm with you. It doesn't seem like she knows much of anything, which makes me wonder what, you know, secret, what new and, identity he's come up with the help of the
well,
U.S.
That's what
government.
I'm saying. If I was going to say, if he got like black bag rescued by the CIA and special forces, it's entirely likely that he's doing essentially the same thing that Margot's doing in Russia, which is living essentially in witness protection. You know, they don't want those persons walking around causing international scenes.
Yeah. So let's go up to Happy Valley, where Ed tries to convince Sam that their fight isn't over and that she should talk with Dev and him. And Palmer rolls into the bar, Miles' bar, declares it shut down. Apparently, security is tight on the base now, and they're sealing off levels 4 and 5. And that kind of gets Sam to agree to talk. Is it weird to you that Miles stabbed Ilya in the back, took over his entire operation and his bar at gunpoint, essentially, and Sam is just totally cool chilling at this bar?
Yes, that's weird.
It's super
like
weird, right?
Again,
she was friends with Ilya, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like they've really told about half the story in twice in half the time they probably would take to tell that story. And yeah, that's
I'd expect some nasty looks or something, because that felt really weird to me. But I don't know. Maybe Ilya gave Miles his blessing once Miles took over.
It's also weird to just shut this place down but not take anybody into custody. It's like, you know, there's crimes being committed here, but we're just going to shut the place down and leave it at that. You know, how does Miles, like, they know about this, but they don't know about Miles' other operation? Do they think that this is the only thing? Did they get his information from Ilya? Because he was one of the first ones across the line, but I don't know. And I don't know that the writers care about it enough, so... what do you think about Ed's wry observation that sometimes you need the enlightened few to lead the masses? Don't bother with raising everyone's class conscious. You know better than them, so.
Yeah, another weird thing in this scene to talk to the person who was just trying to form a union. And push back on that idea. But yeah, it seems like it's the show's thesis almost, you know? You need people, good people in positions of power to do the right thing from time to time and just lead us.
Because to me, this feels like some George Orwell, like finger wagging at progressive movements, that it's like it's easy to run ahead of your popular support if you start thinking that you know better than them. And, you know, you just need to grab the steering wheel by force, maybe, and steer it for a while and everything will be fine. Like, I feel like that's how you end up with Animal Farm type shit. That's how you end up with 1984 type shit, because you never catch up to running that far ahead.
Yeah, but does the show know that? Like,
and you can never trust.
I'm not defending that position. I'm simply saying the show seems to be saying that is the case. You need brilliant people like Dev to do an altruistic thing, even if it's for bad motivations sometimes, you know?
Yeah. No, the show feels like it's trying to triangulate to some kind of middle position on everything, where it's like, well, obviously you can't have too much capitalism, but obviously unbridled socialism and labor movements are insane. And, you know, they're trying to kind of just go down that just right down that middle path. And I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how everything's going to line up on that.
Mm hmm.
But this goes back to like last episode, me kind of being concerned with like the labor movement was always shown as like the Crisis, Jeopardy, terror music, and the Helios/NASA side was always heroic, triumphant, overcoming type of like vibe. And it's like,
Yeah, and I think it has to do with, you know, motivations. Like I said, it's show has characters with certain motivations and it's really leaning on those, even if their actions are
Why we're on the subject of weird things, like, I am truly surprised that the organized crime connection to the organized labor hasn't been made. Like, if you needed to crack some skulls to get people back in line, whereas, you know, Miles' Brute Squad would be great for that, the North Korean Brute Squad. And if you paid him enough money, he'd do it. So it's like, yeah, but
they didn't
really develop any of that.
Up on Ranger, you're going to have something dock. The North Koreans are going to bust out of their shuttle into the Ranger and take over the bridge.
Yeah, yeah, they're going to somehow get that capsule and the prison capsule refurbished and in orbit. Yeah, you never expect the North Koreans.
Yeah, who knows what they're working on over there. No, I feel
but it's weird. It's like when they have all these like moving parts, when you go away for entire episodes, it's like, well, what did North Koreans do? How did Miles placate them with the wife smuggling? And how is he doing that now under the higher security? Like, is his power base going to evaporate? Is it? But
no, it does feel like a lot of that rough ground that we rolled over in the middle of this season is kind of coming back to haunt the show. Because yeah, I have those questions, right? Like, why is this way when we saw something that should have been, you know, completely the opposite now? But
They did just enough world building to be dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing about...
But you gotta follow through on that.
The other thing about how the strike was quashed and destroyed is it weird that this show, which beat the labor, the Hollywood Union strike, the Screen Actors Guild strike, and the actors and the Writers Guild strike, is it weird that this show had an extremely pessimistic take on the labor union or labor movement, and it's on the back of a successful, very successful labor battle that just concluded?
I don't know, because I wouldn't say it was totally defeated, right? I mean, they got a lot out of that strike. They got
at least the first 100 folks.
Yeah, they got a bunch of pay bumps and benefit bumps and bonuses, and I'd say it's fairly successful as the writer's strike.
Well, then
I mean,
why was it framed
is the power
as the
structure
then,
inverted?
Then,
no, but
then I don't understand why that was framed as the labor movement being destroyed and crushed. Like, that should have been framed as we came to an accommodation. So there was 104 people striking, and only these four people
apparently
were left out in the cold. This is horseshit. Okay, we gotta move on, or I'm gonna start reopening old wounds.
I mean, that seems like what the numbers are, but yeah.
And again,
yeah,
it's like the gall of this show, while their brothers and sisters are out in the street striking, to be like, you know, when the billionaires come with a Godfather offer, they're just gonna fall in line and pull apart. It's like, it doesn't sit well with me.
Okay. Let's move on to Dev telling Ed and Sam, Ed that Sam is the key to their plan as they kind of stroll the halls here, and they find Alex and Kelly waiting in Ed's quarters for him. She's apparently going on a mission and he's watching Alex reluctantly. And he and Dev decide they need to find a babysitter. Just immediately pawn his grandson off on someone else.
I know. Ed's just, I don't. Okay.
I know he's organizing an asteroid theft, but come on, man.
He's implicating his grandson in the asteroid theft.
Oh, I know. Kelly's going to be so pissed.
His grandson. Oh, yeah. The scenes of her just beaming with pride and satisfaction over her science mission while her dad is, you know, being a fucking pirate.
Yeah.
Literal pirate with robber baron Dev. Oh, jeez.
I think it's worth noting here that Alex seems to like Dev more than Ed at this point.
Well, yeah. They had a moment on the lander, and Dev's never respected his spaghetti autonomy, disrespected his I guess that makes sense.
And I think that moment with Alex on the way over to Mars was kind of to show Dev is good with kids. You know, he's charming, not with just with adults, but he can speak to children. And he gives Ed, I think, some real and good advice in this episode later on about how to deal with Alex. And I think that those were just supposed to connect the dots, right?
Yeah. Ed's he's a big boomer parent. So, like, I can't imagine my son bringing his son to me and I'm watching him for the first time. And we've had some rocky first meetings and he's taking so much medication because he's got all these special needs, right? And me to just immediately start, what's all this fucking complicated? I couldn't even manage my schedule enough to know that I was actually supposed to be grandpa today, but I'm going to have strong opinions on how, like, Ed.
All I take is HGH. What does he need
also,
all this stuff for?
The gall of him to cite his parenting skills, which led to the premature death of one of his child. He pressured one child into the grave.
And he had to totally reevaluate his life on the other when she didn't want to go to the school he wanted her to go to.
Yeah, exactly. He had a fucking meltdown, caused giant family, scary family conflict. It's like, Ed, he's being a lot this season.
Yeah. I feel like he's headed in a better trajectory though. Like they've done a capture mission on Ed's grandparenthood, I guess, and they're kind of pushing that in the right direction at the end of this episode. So
yeah, but is it like, is he really changed, or is he just happy that his grandson helped him with Grand Theft Astro? Because that's what it feels like, that Alex is useful to me and now I'm warmed up to him. He, like, Alex took a bunch of big steps, giant steps towards him, and he hasn't taken relatively small steps towards his grandson. So I don't know. I am not going to let my guard down with Ed for the rest of the season. I'm just going to assume he's going to be a turd.
Yeah. The old saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I think that probably applies to Ed. He's a pretty old dog.
The dog's got to be willing and open for growth. And this dog seems very calcified and unwilling to do those things.
You know who you can change, though, is the young dogs. And boy, I felt bad for Alex when he's asking his mom as she's leaving, you'll come back, right?
Yeah.
Like, this kid has serious abandonment issues. And then later, you know, he's scared. It's not just of the dark. He said it's of Ed looking like a bear. But to me, it's also worried about his mom not coming back, worried about this guy just yelling at him for running away. It's
right.
Yeah, it's all kinds of things.
No place to fit in.
So let's go back to Earth, where Eli walks Margo to the conference room where some of the M7 are waiting. She says hi to some of her old employees, but they're very cold to her. I like that she has two different nationalities of guard here. It's pretty good.
Yeah, she's got the Marine and the KGB. But they emphasize the amount of guard and security that she's under. Just keep this in mind. But this is all about the Bullfinch's prophecy coming true, like that you are going to be feared and distrusted by everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. And then she's going to brief the rest of the M7 here on their plan to capture the asteroid. And we kind of get,
I like this dual explanations that you get. It's like,
yeah, it's like three explanations, right? You got Margo down in the, and Aleda down in the briefing room. You've got Danielle up on Happy Valley briefing her people. And then you got Dev briefing the heist team.
Reminded me a lot of in Mission Impossible 2, where you've got Duggery Scott, you know, like Tom Cruise is explaining the Mission Impossible mission, and then Duggery Scott is explaining the counter mission. And like, if I know Ethan Hunt, then I do. Mm-hmm. It's yeah, like they're it lets you feel maximum clever because you're getting all the angles from all the sides.
And I like that they have this extra layer of security in the process. It doesn't feel artificial, right? Like so much has gone on Happy Valley that they are rightly, I think, afraid that someone could interfere with this plan. Some disgruntled workers, some other aliens, who knows what. But they have this layer of security with the encryption box.
It's cause and effect. It's move, counter move. You know, like you locked us out of our systems. The Russian locked us out of our systems. We are not going to have this happen to us ever again.
Right. Even though there isn't, you know, without that strike, that labor movement stuff, there wouldn't be much reason to do a discriminator thing. Like why? Everybody's working for the same goal here, right? But not anymore. Yeah. So it's pretty good. I like the fact that it's made tougher. Their plan now is made tougher by the labor union's strike.
Yes, that I do like. I am one thing I was a little unconvinced by is some of the mechanisms of the plot look like they were invented just so it would be easy to follow. It's like we want to reduce this hard thing to Miles stacking cereal on top of motherboards and Sam sleight of handing a command module.
Interesting.
Something that's easy.
Which parts easy do you think were reductive?
Like discriminator. Like, is that
just like a box? Here it is.
Happy Valley doesn't have the computing power to calculate a trajectory burn.
I'm pretty sure that's
bullshit. So the only way you could possibly do it is have Earth send this information on like a 22-minute light delay.
Margo could calculate this on a crumpled
and
up
and the
napkin.
Ranger's just listening to the whole universe, and the only one voice it knows to listen to is this discriminator box. Like, this seems like invented bullshit, but at least it's...
Yeah, that ring really falls to me. I'm with you.
Yeah, but at least it's consistent power. Bullshit, you know? Yeah, come on. This is 2003.
Right,
To compute an orbital burn, I don't know about all that. That seems, but it's like I said, it seemed, you know, in much the same way that Quidditch and Harry Potter exists because J.K. Rowling has no idea how sports work. So this is like, fuck it, I can understand this and people can follow it. I feel like I'm seeing the Quidditch version of space piracy rather than, you know, a compelling case of one, which I think they've done better in previous seasons. But again,
for sure,
at least we have consistent moving parts. We understand the plan. Now, if they fuck up that, I'm going to be really pissed because you've already made it as easy as you can. But it's like all I got to do is get the ops center built. Mm-hmm. Your duplicate Bellagio vault, right? You're going to do that. And then you got to get the discriminator box, and that's the only
thing
they
need. Lee to get in there and do a backflip.
Exactly. That's what they're doing. Yeah. They're Ocean's 11-ing this Mars Mars mission.
Yeah, totally. It's tough in a show that attracts an audience that I think is mostly technically minded to kind of skip details or fudge things, right? That's one of the things I loved about Mr. Robot is they so rarely ever fudged a technical detail. They sweated them big time.
Yeah.
And here I would think that you would want the same, right? Sweat the details on the tech stuff, because
a lot of times
will.
Mr. Robot was directly adapting public hacks that happened, and they're just, you know, make it apply to Mr. Robot. And I really think that's one of the things that made the first part of For All Mankind is they are just kind of cribbing from NASA history and extrapolating, whereas now they're kind of, this is late season Game of Thrones, where they're having to make up a lot of stuff and it's not as compelling as the stuff you got real history for. So
sure,
now we're, you know, we don't have fusion drive, we don't have fusion reactors, this is science fiction technology, and it's starting to sound a little bit more like Star Trek with technobabble. So should we run down the plan, I guess, for everybody, because
So the idea is, like you said, there's not enough computing power up on Mars to calculate the trajectory, the burn that they need to do to get this asteroid on a trajectory toward Earth. So they're going to do it at NASA. They're going to send that data signal up to Ranger to automate this burn. And there is this box that's going to decode the signal and make sure it's coming from an authorized source called the Discriminator. And the plan, that's the plan for NASA, for the M7, for Danielle's crew. The heist plan here is to swap out that Discriminator box with their own dummy version that they can then grab the Discriminator from the Ranger. I think this is the plan. Grab the Discriminator from the Ranger, authorize the signal that they're sending, modify it, and send it to their own box? Is that what they're trying to do? Or are they just trying to fabricate an entirely different signal?
They're going to fabricate an entirely different signal from their op center. But if...
So they'll receive it at their ops comm. They'll receive the real signal. They'll give it the thumbs up. Yep, everything worked just fine. And NASA will be happy with that. And then they'll send their own signal to the Ranger to give it the real burn that
so
they want.
My question, yes. My question is, if it truly is a matter of not having enough computing power, then how does having a second op center on Mars help out at all?
Yeah.
Like, is Dev just doing this with a slide
Dev's
rule?
Really,
he worked all this out on the way, too.
That's and what I'm it's saying. Like, Margo could. Dev maybe could. Elena could.
Yeah. If there's not enough computing power on all of Mars, I don't know if a person would slide. That's the thing. It's like they're,
I mean, I've seen
they're
the Martian,
convincing
right?
me that it's not possible to do, and they haven't convinced me that there is anything. Like, they haven't even said that, like, Dev's got this all worked out. He's got, it's not going to be a 25-minute, there's no 20-minute burn, it's going to be a 25-minute burn. So, like, I don't understand how the secondary op center gets around the lack of computing, and they haven't assuaged my concern that they need the computing, because they've, you know,
no,
all the smart people say they do.
Complete bullshit. Yeah, I don't buy it.
Second, when does NASA know the jig is up? Like, to me, are they going to try to, like if before we actually see it happen, do you think that they're going to get 20 minutes into the burn and everyone thinks it's going to be A-OK, and then the burn doesn't stop? It's like, oh my God, the engines aren't over. We can't override it. Oh, the signals come. Or do you think the second that the shadow ops goes into the ghost ops, as soon as that spins up, do you think NASA is going to be like, oh, we got a pirate signal? What the hell? Oh my God, the Discriminator is not working.
To do the latter, because it's too late to stop it once it happens, right?
So
if you want the tension of NASA knows and we have to keep this burn going, otherwise we're screwed, yeah, you need to do the latter.
So NASA said it, because we said this a couple weeks ago, like, man, they're really setting up an opportunity to fuck up a burn and hit a planet with an asteroid. And we thought, it's like, oh, wouldn't it be interesting if they're going to use Earth as a slingshot? Apparently, they're using Mars as a slingshot. If NASA is able to override that burn at the 2230 mark, I wonder if they're going to set up a situation where going to hit Earth unless Happy Valley. I wonder if they're going to introduce. Do you think there's going to be an introduction of either hitting Mars, because that's a possibility, or hitting Earth?
If it happens, it would have to happen on the Ranger, right? There's nothing NASA can do. Once the burn hits 20 minutes and doesn't stop, NASA can't do anything. Because the time between, like, they won't even know that the burn didn't stop until 22 minutes or whatever after.
It has to be on the Ranger. And I can see people, like, literally trying to pull fuel hoses out of engines and, you know, things like that.
Yeah, sure. Do what they did on Happy Valley with the methane, right? Like, let's just start jerry-rigging stuff. Why not? Up here in the Ranger, this life-supporting vessel.
Because it doesn't feel like Dev and Ed and Sam think that NASA or the Helios people will have a countermeasure. It's just like, oh, fuck, they burnt it for 25 minutes, we're fucked.
I mean, they might. If they intercept the signal, and it's a multi... tens of minutes round trip for communication, like, they won't know that the signal didn't make it to the Ranger until the burn is over, right?
Why is it fully automated? Like, have we ever seen something in the history of the show where it's like not been an astronaut
because
that actually flips
Ed,
a switch? Or
because Ed fucked up the capture mission so bad with his shaky joystick, so now they're like, no, we're not doing that again. No, I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it feels pretty writerly. And even with that, I can see definitely a bunch of holes for them to fall into if they're not careful. But I hope they're careful.
I assume the big tension, I mean, they could do the former thing where, you know, it just doesn't stop at the 20-minute mark if the tension is all around getting the Discriminator out of there, swapping that out. And then once the Discriminator's in, they just yada yada the rest of it because there's no real way to tell or stop any other plans.
Yeah, it might be.
We'll see. But yeah, either way, I think it'll be exciting.
I do like, have we got to the point where, you know, one of the plans was to get, have we got to the scene of them getting Sam on the command deck?
Yeah, there are a couple of scenes around, like, how they're going to get all their people into place, and that's one of them.
I really like that, where Dev kind of like, you know, no one suspects him of being on Mars' side because he just quashed the labor union, the labor movement. And now he's got this reason, like, well, you can't reassign this qualified person. Like, if we seem like we're penalizing a labor organizer, that's like six different flavors of illegal.
Yeah.
And kind of using NASA and Danielle's egalitarianism against them. Because she's like, yeah, you know, her heart was in the right place. And this would be a nice olive branch to show that there's no hard feelings. And they're going to fuck him. They're going to stab him in the back. Like, this changes Danielle's character, I think. The fact that she, from her mind,
once she realizes this,
bent over backwards to help you people. And then after you fucked us and you fucked us, we bent over one and it did the olive branch and not you took that olive branch and you whittled into a knife and you put it in my back. I think this is going to turn Danielle into a much darker, more cynical character, which feels sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I'm bracing for the sadness in advance, but I don't see how she avoids it.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's going to be a blow to her worldview. But now that I'm thinking about it, boy, we're running out of time in this season, huh?
Next episode
is going to be the heist.
And then
maybe the fallout of that. But it doesn't feel like we're going to get a huge amount of fallout because we're going to jump ahead another decade or so.
But like it's clear that like just Mars taking the asteroids, not the end of it. There are probably another, like we talked about, like, can you just invade Mars? Can you do this and that? Like it feels like it's going to take a whole episode to do the heist. And then, you know, a lot of times with the finale, you'll have an hour and a half. But still, to get the asteroid state where you can toss that to another season and everybody think that like, oh, OK, Earth and Mars have worked. That's a tall order for 2-ish hours of television.
Yeah, I don't see it, but I'll be pleasantly surprised if they can pull it off. And I'll be a little bit disappointed if it is all left for the between season stuff, you know, for the montage that we get at the beginning of next season telling us how the nations reacted and what, you know, and you know, a headline, Earth fires nukes at Mars. Like, that's not exciting. It's cool. Yeah, I want to know that there was fallout, but I want to see it.
Yeah, yeah. That's not the kind of thing you want to yada yada through the passage of time montage, for sure.
But we don't have time to get there, so I do wonder how they're going to set the status quo for the next season in these next two
episodes. I was very impressed of how they resolved the moon crisis in season two. Like, I remember thinking going to that, it's like, my God, you've got the orbital dance with the anti-missile system, you've got the Russian invasion of the moon base, you've got the reactor leak, and like how in the and then like what an international fiasco, and Danielle's mission with Kuz, like this is a lot, and they fucking did it. So
Danielle's just gonna walk up, shake Dev's hand, shake Sam's
in
hand,
in orbit of the Martian asteroid, as Gorbachev tearfully takes the country back from the hardliner, and
Irina's imprisoned. Sergey and Margot kiss. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
His wife looks on. What the fuck, man?
Yeah, I was gonna say that's a rough happy ending for her. For the faux Margot.
Yeah.
Fogo de Chow.
Yeah, we'll see how they wrap this season up, but it's looking like it's gonna be a race to the end.
They're gonna have to capture the plot.
Mm-hmm.
and do a 20-minute burn to slow it down so that we can
maybe Ron Moore has a plan to steal the plot, steal the last episode of this season.
Ron Moore is on a rocket to Hollywood, and he found out that like I need my boots on the ground for to land this finale.
Yep. T-minus 3 seconds until the ad. Touchdown, and we're back. All right. So we talked about that. I mean, Miles gets on board too at some point. Which I think happens in this sequence, right? Oh, Sam says she knows the guy who can quietly get equipment off of the Phoenix.
Yeah. Because we still got to do a whole bunch of Margo stuff.
Yeah. Let's go back to NASA for Margo. She tries to ask about Elaita's family, but Elaita tells her that she doesn't get to ask about them anymore.
Fair enough.
Well, it would be fair enough if Elaita weren't hanging around, baiting, just waiting for Margo to open her mouth so she could smack her in it.
I mean, I don't hate that.
She probably deserves it, but why are you sticking around if you don't want her to talk about anything? Just leave. Just give her the cold shoulder.
I mean, this feels petty.
Dead
business. I mean, also like setting a boundary. She's, you know, she's eager to set the boundary, but the boundary needed to be set. I guess my question is, as this plot develops, I think Margot did a really shitty job of explaining her situation to Elaita. She left a lot of shit out, a lot of mitigating circumstances.
Yeah. Would it feel like rationalization to it? If it were coming from Margot directly, would it feel like excuses
saying that
and rationalization?
The
and
circumstances of me handing over our fusion engine technology was Sergei was being strangled on a hotel floor, and I had 30 seconds to decide whether I wanted to watch this man who I love die or give the technical details of, like, I think you can say that. And I think, I don't know if Elaita accepts it, but like that, apparently Margot is just like, well, you know, they got me in a tight spot, and I just cooperated with them. Like,
yeah,
but maybe Margot, they're trying to tell the story of Margot feeling like she deserves this at some point, and like she doesn't want to give the mitigating circumstances.
I could see that. I also think, yeah, I liked it better coming from Sergei. But yeah, it doesn't feel like Margot put up a big defense, and I guess the question is why.
It does make her, I guess from an audience standpoint, it makes her a little bit more sympathetic that she doesn't go for that, you know, she didn't try to manipulate Elaita into liking her. You know, she left
She's
off the mitigating circumstances.
The hate,
so
right?
That,
and it really drives home that point, like you're going to be hated by everybody. And to have Elaita hating her, I think really just makes that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we go back up to Happy Valley, where Ed tries to pick up Alex from the babysitter, but he's disappeared. And they search all over the base for him. When they find him, Ed immediately starts yelling at him. And then he feels bad when he says he was just looking for Ed.
Yeah, Ed can't get a win with this kid, man.
No.
Like, you pawn him off on a stranger. And then the second that it turns out that the space botanist can't be trusted with children, you scream at the child the second you find them. Like, yeah, it's pretty rough.
What is the responsibility here? Do you want to scare the kid into not running off again, or do you want to rationally communicate with the child who may not understand how scary it is to have a
child? It's
tough.
Alone? Like, losing track of your child in the public space is pretty nerve-wracking. But also, this is Mars. I thought Ed...
Yeah, what's he going to do? Open an airlock? I mean...
That's what I'm saying. Like, the child... This isn't like fucking the mall where potentially a child molester is going to steal him and be halfway across the country by the time you find out. Like, I'm not saying there can't be child molesters on Mars. Statistically speaking, there's 500 people
there.
There'll be one or two, you know. But like, yeah, it just seems like it's, you know, I don't know, going in full blown crisis. But Ed also, he's worried, you know, he's fucking things up with Kelly. He's fucking things with his grand, but then he's got that aware. I don't know. It's
he's
a
worried
bit
his
of a
chickens
mess.
Are coming home to roost. He pawned that, his kid off on a babysitter, and then he
so I
want to
say that like none of this feels like it's coming from a sense of concern for his grandson at all. It's just about like, oh shit, how does this impact me?
Yep. Yeah. No, Ed's not the world's best grandparent for sure.
It's unfortunate.
But we'll get more on that later. So Margot gets an American hamburger delivered to her room and savors it. Hamburger and fries, been a while, I assume. She's been eating a lot of pierogies and stuff.
I like how she scrapes the mayonnaise off with the, like, oh God, mayonnaise.
Yeah, you can order it that way, Margot, right?
I would think so. That's a terrible catered hamburger. But I guess like that's the point.
Imagine it's just the way she likes it. Yeah.
I looked at the meat patty, and that's very institutional. That didn't look like it was, you know, grilled by a chef or anything. That looked like it, you know, came out of a bag, went into the freezer, or went into the microwave.
I've had bad room service, but I stay sometimes at shitty hotels. So she's not. She's staying at a good hotel.
I'm thinking if you've had 8 years and not, but hot borscht and stroganoff, and you wrap your lips around the world's shittiest hamburger as an American, it's got to feel pretty damn good. Like it, like a yeah. a bad hamburger has got to be, you know. I'm fucking tired of pierogi.
Last episode, they showed her literally walking beneath a waving American flag, but I felt like her true homecoming was this scene right here.
We didn't, because I probably wasn't in the right headspace, but like we didn't talk enough at last episode about how great that last scene was, where it's like she's walking under Old Glory, flapping menacingly above her, like a literal line to cross, and she looks up and it's the, you know, Molly Cobb Space Center, and it's like you know, her confront one of her last great the rivals, right? It's it is manifestly an uncomfortable place for her to enter, and then they keep applying the prickly pressure in this episode. It's one thing they're doing well. Honestly, Margot's plot is been, I think, pretty great all season long.
Maybe up until this episode, we'll see.
And
talk about the stuff at the end.
What's the latest? Is it Margaret Rinn? Is that who's
it's
something?
It's
Rinn.
Definitely Rinn. I don't remember her first name.
I really noticed this episode that like everything about her performance works, like the voice, the physicality, the makeup. It's like one of the rare really good makeup jobs, because she's extremely young. I don't even think she's 30.
Yeah. Really?
And she, if she is, she's very early 30s, and she's convincingly pulling off at like a 60-ish year old woman better than I think Ed's pulling off a 75 year old man for sure.
Yeah. And she doesn't look like a bear doing it. So
Rinn Schmidt, I got the first Rinn and last Schmidt. Name. Yeah, Rinn Schmidt is the latest. She's doing really good work, and she's also 40. Fuck me, nothing.
Those Californians, man.
Ringo Schmitty, who's 18 years old, and we're introducing her on this podcast. Turns out.
All right, let's go back up to Happy Valley. We're going to jump back and forth here. Dev and Ed bring their equipment request to Miles, and he says it's going to be a problem getting it through the Happy Valley dock. And Dev asks him, what's cooler than $1 million, Miles? And he knows the answer, and so he agrees to help.
I buy the Milosh is vulnerable to this form of attack. He's a greedy idiot, okay?
It's greed.
So, yeah.
Yeah. What's cooler than $1 million? Give me the $1 million. You know, I don't even want to answer that. Just give me the million. I'm good.
If any of you are caught and you don't successfully capture this asteroid, you are like they have to reconvene the Hague. Like, you're going to be tried for like crimes against humanity.
Yeah,
one mentions like that. I feel like no one talks about the stakes, about like how rogue they're going. You know. This is like IBM defrauding the U.S. government on some kind of, you know, imagine like in World War II, if they had defrauded the U.S. Department for like $50 billion or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's that, except for you're stealing from the entire world.
And the stakes are not limited just to this asteroid heist. It's the aftermath too. Deb has to successfully navigate an independence for Mars with a whole security team of NASA goons up here, with, you know, a very pissed off, well-funded, well-established planet.
And they can't capitalize. They can't mine this asteroid without Earth's help and involvement, which
I would
is going to be
so,
the
yeah.
ROI 40 plus years in the future, and maybe even longer, because Mars is probably going to take a lion's share of the ROI.
So it's not just we stole the asteroid, haha, and we get away scot-free. It's now we have to negotiate for our freedom and the spoils of this thing, you know? So
when Earth could just reasonably we'll just send a security team and we'll take all this shit over, and you can try to resist us with your plastic bullets, but then also the valuable thing is in orbit. We could always nuke you from there, and what are you gonna do? It's hard for me to understand how they're gonna keep the hand in this relationship. Like, what poison pill are they going to insert into this to make NASA back off, and to make not just NASA, all of Earth. Like, any one of the M7 countries says bullshit and they try to go after it. It's going to be a hell of the final couple episodes, it seems like.
I mean, maybe he's just betting that Earth won't want to invest the money in it. You know, there's no ROI in fighting a war with Mars. The ROI is with working with Mars. I don't know.
I think if they had more time, it would have been interesting to see Miles be antagonistic, because he'd be like, you know, your fucking labor movement just is like made everything I'm trying to do up here so much harder.
Yeah, like, my fucking liked Ilya and you stole his entire business, so fuck you, do this.
Yeah.
You know, like, Miles has no high ground to stand on at all.
No, he has a selfish interest, and it's almost like, all things equal, I'd like to help you, but I just can't. Like, he should be like, fuck you guys. Your labor stunt has, like, eaten my bottom line. I have to, like, you know, I got to watch my back for Ilya.
His, like, oh, yeah, you know, this is so risky is his way of saying, pay me.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to cost you big time. And he knows Dev can pony up, so.
Hope he's got it in writing. But, and even then,
with a Martian governmental stamp on it, how's he going to get paid from a company that's going to be owned by the U.S. government after this or something?
I mean, they got the asteroid, and they got a functional Martian base, but like you said, it hasn't achieved independence from Earth, and It's not way more independent except for iridium. We could really use some iridium. It's like they need a fucking corn and wheat asteroid that they could find.
It really irked me when they cut open that bag of cornflakes. I'm like, that could have fed 5 people for 2 days or something.
Sure.
Like, holy shit, man, you don't want to waste food on Mars, but okay.
No, I wonder if there will be any of the fact that they've misrequisitioned all this stuff. I wonder if that will cause problems.
All this evaporated milk or whatever they're just dumping out onto the floor.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, that's the thing. I mean, there's going to be fallout from this. I assume Miles is thinking, I would hope that Miles is thinking bigger than, I'm just going to get a payday on this one job. Like, what Dev is telling him, essentially, without saying it, I think, is the thing that I was talking about. Hey, you could become the legitimate business or you know, go-to arm for the Martian economy here if you're willing to support us in this.
Well, I wonder, I mean, because this also, I mean, I know we talked this a couple of weeks ago, but, like, you know, the founding fathers of this country were a good portion of them, like, bootleggers and, you know, black market traffickers and, you know, ne'er-do-wells. And I wonder if they're, like, saying that, like, this is how nation states form. Mm-hmm. Like, there has to be at some point a smash and grab of something, or, you know.
I mean, you don't get a revolution without breaking some laws. So
Yeah, like, this is a colony that's not got a native population to brutalize, but it's a colony that's got a labor population that they can brutalize. And at some point to become independent, you gotta throw off that yoke. You gotta, which involves essentially theft, stealing things, violence. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they might just be showing it like, yeah, Miles here might be known as like, he might end up being the governor, like one, the third governor of Mars.
Yeah.
You know, totally. He might be a great man in Martian history, and uh-huh. he's just a fucking idiot. So
starting out as a thief and a thug. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty sure that's what they're doing here. All right, let's talk about Ed admitting to Dev that he and Alex haven't clicked yet. And Dev tells him a story of the time that he broke his old man's Gemini model, so his father made him rebuild it. And it turned out to be a bonding experience, and he advises Ed to share his passion with Alex, which I think is great advice. Don't force it on him, though, because I feel like Ed's the type of guy to force it on him. Like, hey, we're going to sit down and read this book because I love it. You're going to build this model because I love it. But it's good advice in general.
If you break down the heartwarming story here, Dev played with his father's toys. He broke one. His father came home and beat him. That's what peeling the bark, off.
Yeah.
That's whipping your ass in a literal sense.
Uh-huh.
And then as the tears are drying, he's like, now sit down here and remake this fucking model. That's not a kid's model. This isn't a Lego set, you little shit. And I don't know. It's like pretty abusive and traumatic, but you know, a lot of father and son stories end up that way. So here's my question. Is he drops this thing at the end about these birds that migrate backwards, and I had some time this morning, so I did a little look in this. I'm like, oh, I wonder if there is some kind of, this is a real thing that some birds, because they get confused or because they have a, you know, because all this is hardwired, you know, it's very, there's a few bird species I guess that learn from their parents, larger, like swans and eagles and things like that, but most of the smaller birds are, they just have these migratory routes inbred into them. And sometimes you got a genetic mishap and they migrate backwards. The vast majority of these birds die. The Wikipedia article on this says most of these lost young birds perish in unsuitable wintering grounds. But there's some evidence a few survive and either reorient or are able to reorient themselves in successive winters or habitually return to the same area. It's not like, oh, they just want to go back to see where they came from to know where they're going. And I wonder if you're supposed to take this as the colloquial, funsy kind of way that Dev's using it, or if the showrunners expect you to either know or look it up to know that he's actually saying a bunch of bullshit. And the vast majority of people that try this get fucked.
Yeah, I mean, that's also true, right? Like, and Dev is the exception. Dev's the guy who's tried some really big swings, and he's flown backwards, and every time it's worked out for him, luckily.
Yeah, because when he talks about his partner being like, oh, my partner's too, he's like, he doesn't see the 100 other futures where they listened to him, and they charged ahead and lost their shirts, mm-hmm. you know, lost mm-hmm. their garage and everything. He just sees the singular course of action that led them to become billionaires. And
yeah,
you know,
no, he ran the gauntlet and ran it with 100 other people, and he's the one that made it through where 99 are lying dead on the floor. So,
which is a problem common to a lot of billionaires, it seems, that they just think that, holy fuck, we are infallible geniuses, rather than just
anything
really, really
it, rather
lucky.
Than just
yeah,
being
yeah,
lucky.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. It was his brilliance that saw him through it instead of just, you know, being a statistic, essentially.
Right. And I'm not saying they're stupid or he's lazy or whatever. It's just that, like, you know, hard work and talent is one of the ingredients you need to succeed. You need a healthy dose of luck. And anyone trying to tell you otherwise is full of shit. 100%.
Yep. Agreed. All right. Aleda is approached at her home by Sergey. Sergey tells her the details of what happened with Margot and the KGB. Aleda is hearing him, but doesn't know how to forgive Margot. And Sergey reminds Aleda how much Margot helped her and asks her for her help to speak with Margot. Get a message to her.
That's such a great point Aleda makes, where it's like, sometimes you know you probably should, or it's understandable, but like, God, I just don't know how. There's been too much shit. I don't know how to heal my heart.
You feel the way you feel.
Yeah.
And how do you change your feeling on something, you know? It takes just time and reflection and interaction.
And if I was Bill and I wanted to buckle it up here, I'd be like, look, yeah, Margot maybe didn't have a choice in that hotel room with Sergey's getting strangled out right in front of her, But she for damn sure had choice after choice after choice after choice for decades that she, you know, the whole chestnut of like, if she only gone to the FBI, none of this would ever happen. When she still had those choices, she wasn't taking them. Now, she was being manipulated the entire time, but still, like, I don't know. When you're talking about betraying your country to a rival antagonist country, that's a pretty fucking bright white line to cross.
Yeah, I mean, the way I remember it is they boiled that frog. They boiled the Marco frog, right? They asked her for very specific stuff that wasn't really government secrets, but was behind the back
to help a combined mission and to
and so now they have a little bit of dirt, right? They built up that dirt on her that they could use to blackmail her, and eventually they asked her for the big favor, and she was at that point too in bed with her own secrets and with Sergei to say no. So yeah, she could have said no at any point, but you know, where's the line, right? Like the line, if you don't think you're doing anything that's really bad, then the line can keep going out further and further until you eventually realize, oh shit, I crossed it a long time ago.
Yeah. And like I said, there's, where is that line between, you know, given the Russian, your fusion engine technology versus, oh, well, yeah, our valves work this way because it keeps the CO2 mix just right.
I've feel somewhat sympathetic for Margot, but also
I think at some point before you get to the complicated equation jazz album based communication system with your Russian friend, probably when you've gone too far.
Once
but
you realize you're speaking in code and you don't want anyone to know what you're doing,
you're hiding things from the FBI, that's probably when
you're
when
worried that your underling is going to discover your your plans. Okay, let's go back up to Happy Valley, where Ed is reading a book when Alex wakes up and says that he's scared of Ed because he looks like a bear. And so Ed reads his book to Alex to calm his fears. He's reading The Sand Pebbles here.
What a fucking book to read to a 7-year-old, by the way.
Right.
It's like, when he said it's about a sailor, I'm like, is he going to go in the Moby Dick? And I'm like, oh, I don't recognize that. And I'm like, oh, it's the, without even looking, because I remember him trying to read Sand Pebbles. And we had just, what did we cover that? Did we cover that movie earlier this year?
A few months. Yeah.
Yeah, our producer's shaking her head. Like, I think it was earlier this year or last year for sure. But it's like, that's a wild book. It, you know,
he's sharing his passions. He's passionate about the Sand Pebbles, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Just all the things you'd have to explain to a child about.
Oh, my God.
The history and the setting and, you know, what's a coolie, Grandpa? Yeah, I guess there's just like a lot of stuff going in there.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think that Ed will shave?
Moment. Yes. I think next episode Ed is shaved.
With every one of my nieces, no one in their family other than me has a beard. And, you know, I live 3 hours away. So, you know, I'd only see him 3, 4, 5 times a year. Every single one of these damn girls would be terrified or to standoffish from the age of like 18 months to like, you know, around about Alex's, and they've always warmed up to me, but like, yeah, that's a lot of pressure. Like, I wonder if, and the way he was looking at himself from the past, and he was clean shaven until I wonder if we're going to see a clean shaven old Ed, and that's going to be, is that their way of like shedding some of the unsavory aspects of his behavior?
The unsavory fake beard that they've been using this entire time. That's what they're going to shed.
Yeah, no, his makeup will improve 50% by shaving this thing. But I do wonder if it's like, this is the old Ed. He's back, and maybe we had some problems with him this year, but he's Space Pirate Ed. We like him now. I don't know that
shaving is going to get him there. I need actual action beyond grooming. You know, there are some real good looking assholes out there.
Bleached, no doubt. Do you think that? So you like the shaving theory? Where 50-50 on it?
No, almost 100%. I'm at 90.
That's what
90%
I think too.
Here.
I'm 90% sure they're going to shave that next episode.
I think maybe the next time we see him, like he just comes out of his quarters, he's shaved, and everybody's like, oh, Ed shaved.
When does Kelly find out about this? Because Kelly's going to come back like Donald Glover in that one Community episode with the box of pizzas and Happy Valley's on fire. And like, what the? I went on a 3-day mission. And now you're stealing from Earth? You're stealing $20 trillion, $10 trillion? No, $20 trillion from
Earth?
And my
child is an accomplice?
Yeah.
No, it's...
My
she's
child's
gonna come back
the bag man?
Yeah, it's going to be crazy when she gets back, man. And let's talk about her. She's over at Korolev Crater. They're setting up the robotics equipment. She's just drinking in the moment, the landscape here, which... I don't know if they embellished here with some CG or what, but it is bright as shit over there.
This is what this fucking place looks like. I looked it up.
No,
this is a
really?
No, this is a crater on like the transition between, you know, I guess Mars proper and the South Pole. So there's a lot of water down there, and this supposedly this crater, and it looks just like it if you look it up on Wikipedia, has as much water as Bear Lake in Canada. And I'm like, what the fuck is Bear Lake in Canada? Apparently Canada has other Great Lakes that are not the Great Lakes. And this is the Great Bear Lake, and it's North America's fourth largest lake, right behind, I think, Superior and Huron, and I forget the other one. It's the eighth largest freshwater lake in the world. It's like, yeah, I guess this is like a popular target for like colonization because there's just so much. And unlike the South Pole of Mars, it kind of wax and wane. This crater is like stable. It's got like a layer of atmosphere above it that's actually colder than the ice below it. So this ice is ancient and like a permanent fixture until we go to drink it all.
Right. Right. To piss in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And the other
blinding.
Thing is...
crazy
real sense of wonder at this place because it is so bright. The albedo of water ice is insanely bright. If you've gone skiing, you know this. But also these people are pretending they're in 1/3 gravity. Did you notice that
there's a lot of gravity work in this episode? Yeah
Like I feel like they only remember that when they're wearing spacesuits,
when they're
all every
the
other
surface.
Time
yeah.
Yeah, like there's this one guy effortlessly like lifting this big crate of thing, and like just the way they're moving where it's like slightly a different gait than that. It's like, God, why? So they know to do it, but the gravity is not caused by the spacesuits, man.
No.
It's a fixture
caused by the planet.
You don't go through the airlock and they pump more gravity into it. It's like psh, 1G established. Like, God damn, clean this shit up, guys. I know you can do it now.
They would have to do it in every scene on Mars, every scene. And like,
that's not an impossible ask. I don't think
I agree. It seems like it just comes with a territory. Like when they say, hey, we want to shoot a whole bunch of stuff as if it were on Mars. They say, what are we going to do about the 1/3 gravity?
Yeah.
And they go, well, we'll fake it.
Yeah. And I don't expect them to if you had to have a scene of people running down a hallway. Like, I don't expect to but if you're just walking around in a normal thing, don't have Palmer go ugh, when he picks up Kelly's bags. And there's just a certain lightness, and it's an acting thing. Like, hey, while you're going about this scene, just remember you weigh a third of what you do on Mars. So just make everything's a little
just
floatier.
Act like
a little...
you're 3 times stronger than you are. Wait, what? How?
Hey, I'm not an actor. But these people are paid to do it, so
yeah,
you know,
if there was a way to put on Chris Hemsworth's muscle without showing it, they could pretty easily do 1/3 gravity. But I don't know, it's hard. It's a hard thing to film. I think it's a really hard thing to act because, man, you're asking them to do something that is physiologically not possible, right? Just be 2/3 stronger than you are, or 3 times stronger.
Yeah, I understand but I reject it. It's asking a lot. Like, there's got to be a way to do it. Like, here, they teach their extras. They put their extras through zombie school on AMC The Walking Dead, and AMC The Walking Dead doesn't give a shit about anything. Like, how are they more prepared to have people shamble than like, hey, here, look at some. Here's some scenes of astronauts on the moon. Do you see how they're different from Earth? All right, that's how, and here's Earth, like, Mars is like halfway between those two differences. I think it's possible. I think it's possible, especially when they're in the space. The other thing that's been driving me nuts is crazy. Like Ed too often acts like he's in the cockpit of a 747 rather than a spaceship. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, your arms should just kind of like hang. I don't know. Yeah, this is like a bugaboo for me in all space shows.
This is really far away from Happy Valley, which makes me wonder, why didn't they land here? Why did they go to Happy Valley again? I can't remember, because if all the water is here.
You know, I wasn't prepared to answer this question, but wasn't a big plot point that, like,
they weren't
supposed to land at Happy Valley?
Oh.
Because it was like a disaster,
right. Crash,
and
yeah.
They crash landed, and yeah. But there was water. I mean, they knew that there was water in that cliff.
Uh-huh.
So.
But there's 6,300, almost 6,400 kilometers from Happy Valley. Wow.
I bet it's a real bitch to get solar power there, like at the poles of Mars. You're already much further from the sun anyway, and you got the dust storm. Like, it might be just it's just a real bitch catching the sun down there.
Mm-hmm. Could be. They didn't traverse this by land, right? I think I saw a lander.
They had to have a shuttle, surely.
Yeah, because that would be crazy. You think they're going to find anything here? That's the thing. I keep looking at Kelly, you know, pondering the majesty of the place and going, don't get your hopes up, kid. This is the first exploratory mission to find life on another planet. Your odds are infinitesimal.
I do wonder if that's going to be the thing that they cling to for why this international thing resolves in a nonviolent way. Like, finding life on another planet is going to just like blow people's minds and chill them out. Because they've said that this would change everything. And today, like, you know, it's often signs like, the first time we see evidence of extraterrestrial life, like real evidence, it will change everything. It'll change everything. And
what does
maybe
that
they're
mean,
leaning
though?
On that.
Will it change the hearts and minds of people who are looking to just exploit Mars for its resources and expand?
It's not going
to
change the fucking profit motive. No.
That's the thing.
That's what
everything.
Has to evolve. But it might be something that heads in that direction. I don't know.
I mean, maybe it could give a temporary head of steam and a little bit of impetus to listen to the people who are saying, hey, there's life out there. We should be a little more cautious with this. But
communicating with an alien, I think, would change things forever. But like discovering a microbe on Mars or Europa or whatever. I know we're preparing a Europa mission right now. I don't see that changing anything. I don't think that. Yeah, I think
partially because
it
feels so inevitable. Like I can't imagine there being nothing out there. Like, is it going to be on Mars? Who knows? But it's going to be somewhere, I assume.
Yeah, but I think there'll be instantly moving goalposts if you discover like microbes on Mars. Like all the people who's like, you're gonna have to change what the Bible says. You're gonna have to change what this. They're just gonna be like, I ain't real life. We'll be back right after this spacewalk. Strap in, we're diving into more for all mankind.
Yeah, microbes just make it anthropocentric or whatever.
Bacteria, are they even alive? Let's open that debate back up. Are they even really living things?
Right. Is a plant alive? Sure.
I never talked to one.
So Margo sits in the viewing room at Mission Control, and Leda comes up and delivers updated readings of the asteroid's path. Margo looks at them, finds a post-it note with a formula on it, grows intrigued, and says she'll go over the figures tonight.
You'll recall that this is how her and Sergey communicated through these little post-it notes that they would solve, and they would say HTE2O equals coordinates on Mars. And in this case, I think it solves to a time and a GPS coordinates.
Yeah, there was a west and a north, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Telling her where to meet him and what time.
Longitude and latitude.
We'll see that here in a bit. Miles goes over the smuggling plan with his team up at Happy Valley, and they execute with forged requisition forms and swapped out goods. And they get the equipment they need through security and unload it in their makeshift ops comm called Ghost Ops. Unfortunately, they're missing their fake discriminator, it went to the secure lockup, and Miles says, well, there's an intake vent, but we're too big to get through it. Darn. Stymied. And they give up. Plan is off. Oh, no, I'm kidding.
It's such a bummer. So I had a few... I was sitting there, especially on subsequent watches, thinking, do I buy that this goon is going to just, like, open the thing and, like, oh, yeah, powdered milk? Like, this wouldn't fool a DEA agent at the southern border. Mm-hmm. But those people have had decades of the war on drugs to get wise to all the ways you can sneak drugs into a problem. But, like, am I crazy, or am I vastly overestimating the skill it takes to, like, want to be like, okay, yeah, I need you to unload this whole box. I want to see the bottom of this box. You know,
it's about like this time, right?
Especially since
you could do that with everything, but it's about time. Is it worth it? Because there's a risk to reward here, right? Like, the risk is you hold up everything and it takes forever to get anything. It becomes super cumbersome and annoying to get anything from the supplies, but also the risk there is you let some stuff through.
But they're already letting, like, the vast majority of people through without their, and that's the other thing. It's like, Miles is a guy who just ran an unlicensed hooch distillery.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know anything else about him, but you know,
might
like,
scrutinize him a little more.
Scrutinize a little bit more, and again, like, I would buy this if this was like year five and it's been forever since there's been a labor disruption or a sabotage or anything, and it's just yeah. On the eve of an asteroid capture mission, when you've had like a hot shooting war between labor and management, it felt a little bit. I would have almost rather them gotten busted. One of them got busted, and then they have to use Alex to get, rather than they just forgot to pack the cornflakes in the right box, and oh, now we don't have our discriminator.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't know. It felt a little too easy.
Yeah, I'm with you. It definitely felt a little, you know, Ocean's 11. This was more of a fun heist than I guess it should have been, right? They're having almost too much fun with these scenes, and I don't know, because they are fun, I guess I'm letting some stuff slide, but you're right. Like, this guy shouldn't be on the team. This might have been an opportunity for them to somehow leverage the North Korean relationship. I don't know, but it does feel like Miles should not be there, because Miles would, like, be under heavy scrutiny.
They forge, there's like, oh, we're going to forge requisition slip. You're going to forge, so they have apparently an entire duplicate of their op center up in Phoenix storage.
Mm-hmm.
And a person's up there fulfilling these orders. Like, no one runs up like, Jesus Christ, the Mars just requisitioned all of our backup ops gear. Does anyone want to check this? But apparently a guy who's just like, well, okay, I guess they're just ordering all their highly secured ops gear at one point, you know, and it felt a little too easy. This goes back to the Quidditch of it all. It's like,
did they actually requisition that gear? I can't remember. They said something about forge requisitions.
They wrote it forge requisitions for all of the gear, and then their guy is going to take it and put it all in grain boxes.
So that gets it off to Phoenix, right? And then to get it out of the dock at Happy Valley, they have to
pick it up and take it to yeah.
I mean, unless the guy up there is just kind of a Miles type, right? He wouldn't know comms equipment from I don't know, some iPad or something. Like,
but like they act like this supply clerk up there, he just got unlimited power. Like, he's just like, you know, there's no check. Once you get a requisition form, that's all he needs to take every bit of gear, the most highly secured sensitive gear, and they're trusting, and he works alone apparently, or he's got everybody else bribed up there. I don't know. I think they're smart to keep this as surface level as possible and keep it moving. Don't ask too many questions, but.
Or really get into it and sweat the details, you know?
Yeah.
That's the other way you could go.
They would have had to explain all that stuff with Ilya and Miles episodes ago.
Yeah, totally. So Ed sends Alex through the vent to get the Discriminator, and he gets in the room, but the Discriminator is up on the top shelf. Ed tries to call off the mission, tells him to come back, but he climbs up, gets it, knocks some stuff over in the process, but he does get out with the box, and Ed tells him
nails the backflip in the in the vault.
Totally. I think one of them could have
replaces
fit in that
the Discriminator with a duffel bag full of stripper coupons, and they're out.
I don't know. Ed looks like he could have slid through that vent. You push his feet from the other side.
There's some turns, some twists and turns, it sounded like. It wasn't a straight shot. He had to Bruce Willis it a bit.
Yeah. He could have done it. I don't know. I thought it was a kind of fun dilemma. You know, you need the small person to get inside, but you need the tall person to get the box. And for a second,
yeah,
there,
and
I'm
they
like,
just,
ah, shit.
They just had a breakthrough, Ed and Alex. So that kind of like, because, you know, if he tried to do this at the first of the episode, Alex would have ran and hid. But now he's kind of wanting to impress Grandpa, or he's warming up to Grandpa.
And I think that's like the reason that Ed doesn't immediately just ask him, well, hey, can you climb up there and get it, kid? Because he doesn't want to like push the kid too far, right?
Right.
He's surprisingly sensitive in this scene.
I kind of wish if they're going to go with Ed shaving that he had done it between the last two scenes, because I think it would have been more powerful for clean shaven Ed. Like, because it's like there's also this, you know, we still have the society's prejudice that like clean faced people are more honest. They have nothing to hide. It's why we haven't had a bearded president for the last 100 fucking years. Like, I think it'd be interesting to have like Ed shave, and then that's part of the trans. That's part of, you know, he's more trustworthy and his grandson. Yeah, I don't know. Less looking like a bear.
I want to know who was the one guy that ruined the beard's reputation. Because there had to be a straw that broke the camel's back, right? Like somebody said, you know what? That bearded guy just fucked me so hard.
So Ulysses S. Grant, that teapot dome scandal.
Yeah.
I know that there was a teapot dome scandal, but I could not for the life of you tell me what the teapot dome was, why it was scandalous. Hell, it might not even have been. It might have been a Grover Cleveland fuck up. But I just remember, that was it. Everybody trusted beards, but they tried that teapot dome bullshit.
There was a lot. Part that goes on the top of the teapot?
I think so. There's a lot of political cartoons about it. And oh boy, it really, really made beards in a bad light. Really put them in a bad light.
What was it like? Was it like the way our president eats a hamburger? Was it like that? Oh, he puts the teapot lid on weird. What a scandal.
I think he did the teapot dance in front of a foreign dignitary, and it just, you know, I'm a little teapot, short and stout, and Grant did that in front of the premier of Russia and just crippled our, and it's from there on out, beard, you can't trust beards.
Wow. I buy it. All right, yeah, the only thing I could think here is, holy shit, Ed is making him accomplice to the theft of an asteroid, and Kelly is going to be so pissed when she gets back, because this is going to get back to her, right? Like, she's going to walk in, you guys have a good
Alex.
Time?
they need a patsy. They need a patsy. Alex is going to go down for everybody.
Put the Discriminator under his pillow and help them find it. You know, maybe she'll look
Ed's
over
like,
there.
Come on, Kel, his lungs are shot. What do you think? He's got another year or two left. Come on.
And then his hands start shaking and he
don't give me
in
that
his pockets.
Don't give me that microgravity shit.
Mm-hmm. No, but she's gonna, I mean this is gonna come out, right? He's gonna say, oh yeah, well, you were gone, Grandpa and I did a heist, we did it, it was fun, he sent me through a vent, I stole a thing.
Yeah, and I do wonder how Kelly's thing does connect. If it's just going to be like a distraction, the world, or is it going to be? Is like her robot's going to be like? Is Dev going to commandeer that? I don't know. Plus, like, now that I'm really unpacking this, the betrayal that Late is going to feel, that like Dev's like, oh, I just want to go manage, and he's going to end up stealing the asteroid for Mars. You know, like, and they are the two that put him in the position to do this.
Yeah, and I guess he brought Kelly along, but he's leaving Aleta behind, kind of.
Yeah, forget the Gilded Age. It's the Iridium Age, man. Robber Barons of Mars.
Mm-hmm. We'll see how it goes. Margot decodes Suri's message. It includes coordinates and a time, and she thinks about it and then flushes the note. Is she considering the fact that this could, and almost certainly is, a KGB trap that she's fallen prey to several times before this?
How would the Bullfinch have her claw still in Sergei? Is he that deep a sleeper agent?
Why do you assume this note comes from Sergei if you're Margot?
Oh,
I know it's within
keeping
with their tradition of passing notes, but
especially now that
the KGB doesn't know that?
Well, I mean, let's back it up and be like, how the hell did Margot make it to this diner in the first place? She's got a U.S. Marine and a KGB officer standing outside her door at all times when she's taking a piss
at
3 p.m.
It's insane that she shows up. This is the part of the episode where I call bullshit. It's really
this
the
U.S.
only part,
Marine,
so I like
that
the episode,
won't,
but yeah.
That won't sit on his pockets when invited is just going to get real sweepy. He's going to get EB and CP, and he's just going to nod
at
off
the same
with his
time
KGB
that the KGB
buddy.
Agent does, yeah.
Yeah, like... I think it's telling that the show doesn't even give you a plausible, like, you know, she snuck out her hotel room, like she braided all of her sheets together and wriggled out the window, like,
right? Like, that kind of pisses me off, though. Like,
and no one forced you to give her a dual guard, man. You could just be like, right. Well, maybe the Bullfinch overestimates Margot's loyalty. You could have told the story of, like, the Bullfinch being, but then that makes the Bullfinch look stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just going to, you know, defy gravity at the end. Margot's just going to fly somehow.
What should have happened here is he sends this message. She doesn't show up. He leaves. That's the end of it.
And I thought they had some balls. Like, I really, the first time I was watching, they really played Sergei's kind of despair and kind of like, wow, gal, she's not going to show up. And then she does. And I'm like,
yeah. And then it becomes,
I don't know. Because, like, what did Margot really learn that she didn't know before? That the Bullfinch has been targeting her from the very beginning?
That she was Sergei's handler during that whole op?
That's what I'm saying. That, like, Sergei, like, was never in love with her. That he was a plant from the very beginning. That was, like, that's what he said. He's like, she's my handler. Is she sent me to America in the first place?
Yeah, I don't know if I would classify that as I never loved you. That's a little... That is maybe reading too much into that, but...
But Margot, like, that's an inference that she could
take. Feel, yeah,
it might like, feel, yeah. Like, oh my god, we never had anything real. It was a KGB bit from the beginning. You were a honeypot. You were a red fucking sparrow. Mm-hmm. You went to the same school Jennifer Lawrence did. Like, what? Yeah. And then he's like, you can't go back there. Well, what the hell is she going to do? Is there going to be appetite at the State Department to stick their neck out for Margot at this point?
I mean, if she can give her guards the slip here, why not just give them the slip and run off to Kalamazoo? I don't know.
She's just going to go off the grid?
Yeah.
Go hang out with Jesse Pinkman in Alaska? What the?
I mean, she's apparently a master spy at this point. Like, she can escape her dual guards. I'm being facetious. Yeah. But, like, I don't know. I don't know what her path to staying in America could possibly be. Giving secrets to the Americans. Being the triple agent.
What is Russia
she,
got?
What if she tells them about the faulty bolts? Is that enough to do it?
See, I thought you and I both agreed that the Russians came clean on that when they did the investigation.
Boy, I can't remember that. That was a few episodes ago.
Because Margot said, like, if NASA sees these numbers, they're going to know that something was up. Like, I don't know how you hide the fact that the bolt, you know, it's like that. I thought that's how she found it. Like, she just did the material science calculations and saw, oh, this is bullshit. So I thought them bringing
I thought the Russians covered it by,
maybe,
you know,
they got ahead of it.
No, not covered it up, because I don't think they can cover it up. I think Margot's right when she says the calculations will reveal this was the problem. But
yeah,
I assume that the calculations would have been done by now. So maybe you're right. Maybe.
Yeah, I thought that
that's
like
a
maybe
ship she has.
that kind of like cooled tensions between, you know, taking care of Svetlana and the Russians, being forthcoming about their issue with the, but you know, also it's like it never, Ed's shaky hands never came out either. But maybe you're supposed to understand that the Americans like, you know, we had a guy with shaky hands. You kind of fucked up the materials. You know, it's like it's kind of like pox on both our houses kind of thing.
I don't know, because when the Russians realized that they had fucked something up, they backed off on one of their stances, and I forget exactly what that was.
That's when they agreed to the Indian trial of Svetlana, which they also haven't revisited.
Right. No.
I mean, unless there's been like a news flash that I didn't see in one of the newspapers that we're seeing.
Yeah, I guess that's why I forget it, because they never followed anything up with that, which... I don't know. That's fine. I mean, that was just essentially she was a way to piss off Ed and get him on this other trajectory and to smooth things over between the nations.
There's a lot of just-in-time storytelling where it feels like we need Ed to be here. What thing could piss him off? He's got this and that, and okay, we're going to introduce the episode before that. It's, you know what I mean? Like, they're working backwards to get, but like... Mm-hmm. Instead of having this situation to kind of organically, the pieces emerge, they need the pieces, construct the pieces, and once the pieces have been used, well, you know, Svetlana's got no other... But I don't know, maybe I'm being too harsh. Maybe they got a plan that they'll execute.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, I don't know how Margot stays in America. It's one thing for Sergei to say it, it's another thing for Margot to do it.
Yeah, it's just like such an inner... I mean, they promised her diplomatic immunity. Like, the United States would be in a world of shit if they black ops Margo. And I don't know,
diplomatic
immunity.
She's
like, you've got to save me or they'll kill me. And, like, I can see the entire State Department, the CIA, like, aw, damn, aw, shit.
And we've got a spy on Mars. Big fucking deal, right?
Right.
Yeah, we don't care about you.
Real politic.
But yeah, she goes all in on this because she meets Sergei at that diner. He's about to leave when Margot arrives, and she tells him they both have their lives and this can't happen. Sergei says, oh yeah, Irina's the person who destroyed both of our lives. That might be impetus enough for her. You know, it might not be that she's pissed about this being a setup from the start, but that like she thought she had something with Sergei, and they do. I still think there is a genuine affection there. I don't think he manufactured all that, because if there's not, he doesn't come out of hiding for this, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't expose himself to this risk to warn her. So maybe that's the thing. She's pissed that she blew that up.
Do you agree that this reveals that he did not want to rekindle things romantically with Margot, but this is just more of a humanitarian concern of her life from their... Because, like, I think they were setting it up to, like, even Margot's expectation is like, oh, you want to, oh, you can't, you've got a life, you got a wife and all that. But, like, I think Sergei's like, no, I don't want, I'm not here to fuck you or make time with you.
That ship has sailed, yeah. But I'm trying to save your life now. I think that's what it felt like.
Because I thought that was wild in, like, you know, the, like in the, that'd be wild for her to, for him to, like, cast off his faux Margot just because the real thing is alive and
coming out of the Soviet Union. He's gonna need one hell of a fugue state story when he gets back, though, because like he's gone multiple days, just without any notice to his wife at all.
Yeah, like he was like going to school and he just like took a right turn there instead of left. Yeah,
he can't really be like, oh yeah, I was going to save my ex's life. Who is your ex? Don't ask.
Yeah, you know, Moscow Margo.
But wait, I thought you've been a high school teacher for 30 years. Anyway, final scene here where Ranger flies out to the asteroid with Sam looking for her opening to swap out the Discriminator, which is right in the middle of Opscom. Just right there in the center of the bridge.
And Palmer
strapped in
holes in her.
Uh-huh.
Like, he is locked in. I noticed that. He is not looking at anything but her, and she's not even near the Discriminator.
No.
And I was sitting there thinking, like, how is she going to do this? And they pan up to her face and she's like, fuck me. And I'm like, and then they cut the black. I'm like, wow. It's a good place to cut it because I can't even. And it's a cruel place to cut it because now we're 2 weeks ahead. Ha ha ha. We have to wait 2.5 weeks to see the next episode because that's when we'll be getting together.
Well,
in real time and recording it.
We have to wait 2.5 weeks to record that episode, not to watch it.
Well, we still got
feedback watch it immediately after this.
Yeah, maybe. But then so now you got to wait 3.5 weeks for the finale.
I know.
You're just time shifting yourself into a more fucked up position,
man. Time shifting your pain. They're doing the low grav effects here. Essentially no grav. I mean, I know they're under thrust, but I don't know the direction of the thrust.
Yeah.
But it seems like very light thrust. They talk about how weak these ion or plasma engines are, so.
True.
Yeah. They sweated the detail there, but that's it.
Yeah, they have to. They start hanging out in zero G, just standing.
There's no awesome needle drop like there was last time, but I feel like the fuck me is just as good.
Yeah.
And I felt like the episode, you know, overall kind of warranted that needle drop. I'm super excited going into a heist, you know, having it, it's sort of delayed gratification here, but I think it's going to be real exciting next episode.
Yeah, I mean, out of nowhere, they've gotten to the point where you kind of expect For All Mankind to be late the season, where it's like, look at all this moving parts heading the one direction at cross purposes. How in the hell is this ever going to be resolved? So,
and then the out of nowhere is kind of a problem, but also now that we're in it,
I'm
ready for it. Let's do this.
Like I said, there's been mistakes made along the way, but that's the great thing about television is if you make those mistakes, you're probably going to lose people along those ways, but the people that are left, you know, you can forget that, like, hey, we weren't exactly happy with how they got to the organized crime thing. We weren't very happy with how they did this, that, the other. But like, if we're happy with the asteroid being stolen, then I think we'll have fond memories of it. It's all going to be, it's the next two episodes. Like, this whole season, I don't think it's going to be a failure, but like, if we want it to climb back to where it got in season 1, 2, and 3, the next two episodes are where it's going to happen.
Yeah. Next one better be a banger. X promised me something. He said he was going to give it to me, and I want it. God damn it.
I was going to get something, X, and I want to, I want you to get me. I want to be got.
That's it.
All right. As we mentioned, we're not doing feedback this week because we recorded these in advance so Jim and I could spend some time with our families over Christmas. Please send your feedback. Get that stuff queued up about how you think the last two episodes have gone and your predictions for the next episode at fam@baldmove.com, fam@baldmove.com. If you want to see what else we're doing here at Bald Move, great way to find out is our social media, because, man, we got a lot of Christmas content, a lot of stuff coming out, a lot of movies. Follow us everywhere at Bald Move, except for TikTok. We're at Baldest Move there. And finally, if you would like to support what we're doing here, get ad-free feeds, access to some of that bonus Christmas content we've been doing. This year, by the way, movie reviews for Scrooged, Love Actually, 20th anniversary of Love Actually, 25th anniversary, 30th anniversary of You've Got Mail. All that and more for club members. Support.baldmove.com, and we'd appreciate that, your support. But yeah, that's going to do it for this episode. Until we rejoin you guys in the new year, hope you have a happy holidays and a happy new year. We'll see you then. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Bye, Bob.